And welcome back to the Learning Man Podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. I am your host and guide through this journey. First of all, I just want to say thanks. Thank you so much for listening in on this crazy project to start a podcast. I've listened to so many important stories over the years, and I wanted a vehicle to be able to tell those stories. So if you could please subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast, and please feel free to share. I really want to get these stories out into the world. Hopefully someone out there can find guidance from these stories. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to episode 16, The Bus to Forever with Fila Estrada, I highly recommend you listen to that episode prior to listening to this episode. This episode was actually a Zoom call. It was a pre-production Zoom call. In production, a lot of times we have pre-production meetings where we essentially interview with the guests and kind of get an idea of what we want to talk about prior to us actually talking about it on the podcast. At one point of the questioning process, Victoria, who you'll hear her ask a few questions here in a second, she was asking some really deep, really fantastic questions, and I couldn't say no, so I decided to hit the button and record the interview. I'm so glad that I did, because there were so many great details and tidbits and stories that Fila shared on that call, and I'm just so thankful and proud to have been able to capture that and share that on Fila's behalf. On this call, again, it's a Zoom call, so the audio is not going to be that great, and only the people that are going to be directly in front of the mics are going to sound fantastic. I've tried to enhance the audio as best as I could, so that way those other voices could shine through. Those other voices that are going to be on there, obviously myself and Fila, and then his wife Heather is actually on the call, as well as Victoria Bortoff, who was a part of this process way back in the project's infancy during the pre-production phase. She did a really great job at asking some very, very directed questions, and it was great working with her for that short amount of time. So this is it. This is the recorded call, and I think you're gonna like it. And I wanted the opportunity to be able to share that with you today. So check it out. This is The Learning Man.
I'm 35 years old, and I was 12 years old when I came out to the United States. I'm just like you, but without the same rights. My name is Filadelfo Estrada Ramirez, y esta es mi historia.
This meeting is being recorded.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was definitely, I want to say chained.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to say I'm in a prison almost, but yeah, I guess I can't think of
anything. You've told me before, just like the idea of DACA recipients being held to a higher standard than like the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that we are being held to the higher standard. I think that we want to achieve that as a DACA recipient, just because we're giving it an opportunity that we didn't have. And I feel like the majority of the DACA recipients take advantage of the opportunity and try to become as successful as possible. Within their means, obviously, but I don't think I actually haven't researched the statistics, but I would love to see what statistics of DACA recipients, how many of them are successful, what jobs they hold, how they contribute to the U.S. and whatnot. Because I'm sure that there's doctors out there, there's nurses that are DACA recipients. And you know, the like you said, you don't – I'm the first person that you've met that's a DACA recipient. And I almost think that you probably have talked to people that are DACA recipients that you may not know of.
You probably have friends that are DACA recipients that they just don't feel comfortable in saying that they are.
Yeah, that must be absolutely true. But this might be an easier question, and Heather's here, and maybe she could also help us. What words would you use to describe yourself personally?
What words would I describe? I mean, fun, outgoing, hardworking. That works.
Yeah, he's the person that makes everybody laugh, like constantly. He's like the person you want in the room when everybody is in a bad mood. Philo will like somehow flip it.
He diffuses the situation.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's the diffuser.
He really is. Yeah, he's hardworking. Like, not an exaggeration. Since we've dated, he's never taken a sick day.
Wow.
Never called out of work.
Yeah.
And I cannot say the same.
Yeah.
I've shown up late, but yeah, never called.
I mean, we all have, so it's, you know.
I've shown up late.
He's the most grateful person that I know. Like when we talk about, like I get irritated. My family is like a family unit and they are wonderful. My parents are so loving and I have that really strong connection with my parents, which now I'm like able to share with him, which is really awesome. But when I hear some of the things that like his aunt and uncle maybe said or did when he was a kid, his response is never like ill toward them. It's always, but they gave me a life here that I wouldn't have had without them. So always from a place of gratitude instead of like, I just feel really annoyed. I'm like, I can't believe you still talk to them sometimes.
Yeah. Fila, do you still have family in Mexico that you talk to or have a relationship with?
Yeah. So I have my sister and my brother.
Okay. So you're still there.
Yeah. And my sister now has two kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did they ever come to the US or did they grow up in Mexico?
So my brother is actually special needs. He's never been out here. My sister has been out here. She was out here once, and that was about 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. She came out here and then went back to Mexico.
Yeah. What to you? What do you think has been the most outstanding thing about? How should I say this? I guess, like, have you noticed any differences between your siblings who stayed in Mexico and grew up and were raised there versus you, I mean, who had time in Mexico, but then essentially, like, became a man, like, here in the United States and went through adulthood here in the U.S.?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, there's a ginormous difference. I mean, they have a whole – well, my sister has a whole different mentality on life, I feel like, and she just –
What type of mentality is that?
The way I see it is kind of the way to put it into comparison is like going into a bad neighborhood in Chicago. If you grew up there, the neighborhood we grew up wasn't the best. It's starting to get better, but if you grew up there, you're in a mentality. And when I came out here, it was like stepping out of that. You got a chance to see another side of the world. And, you know, she unfortunately is kind of stuck in that mentality.
Like how so, like on guard, guarded?
I mean, out there, you definitely, out there, you have
careful,
to be
cynical.
Out there, you have to be a shark because if you're not, you get eaten. So you either eat or get eaten. And so she's definitely sharp in that way. But, you know, growing up without parental figures, I can definitely see through her relationships also that she has issues. She's a single mother with two kids. And so I feel like her mentality is just different also, not only by the environment, but also by the background and everything that happened in our lives. It's interesting to see, not to say that I'm perfect by any means, because I'm not.
Hey, you leave your socks everywhere.
Still.
Yep. Yeah, I can see some right now. Take them off in the living room and just throw them on the side. I don't know exactly how to put it into words, but it's different. It's definitely a different culture. She just has a different mentality, and I feel like the system out there has got to her.
Are you trying to say you don't think that she thinks she could become more than where she started?
In a way, yeah. She's also like in this little bubble of her own world. And I feel like that's what happens to people out here who grow up in the hood. They just get stuck, and all they see is like, you know, four square blocks around them, and they never really get out of there.
And yeah, poverty.
Yeah, and yeah, the cycle of poverty, and
yeah,
it's if you don't step out of that, or if you don't somehow get taken out of that, you just never see it. I guess it's. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier that that it was really difficult, like that most Americans go over to Asian countries to adopt, okay, and that because their governments make it a lot easier, but yet, you know, we share a border with Mexico. And, you know, even all Latin American countries are closer than, you know, China is, or Japan or Korea.
Right.
But that the government makes it more difficult. Are you talking about the Mexican government, or are you talking about the U.S. government?
Mexican government.
And why do you think that is for adoption?
I don't know. I guess in my small brain, I feel like Mexico might just be jealous of the United States. And so like a lot of Mexicans actually don't like the United States. They think poorly of it, you know, in their politics and whatnot, but.
Probably more so in recent years.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's very hard for, I've heard, I don't know by experience, but I've also heard that, you know, it's almost nearly impossible for an American to own a business in Mexico, or it's very hard for them, I believe, to buy property in Mexico as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't know why it is, other than, you know, in my small brain, I would just think that they're just kind of jealous in a way. And
I feel that. So when you think about being an American, especially now that you've applied for residency, what does that mean to you? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, so luckily through DACA, I feel like my professional growth is limitless, I guess.
Yeah.
That's good, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I feel like, you know, through DACA, my professional growth is limitless. So in that aspect, I don't feel like I'm lacking much. Also because I was giving a social security number, which allowed me to drive. So that alone, it gave me a whole bunch of new opportunities and freedom. But through the process of becoming a resident through marriage, to an American citizen, what that means to me is the ability to be able to visit my family more often, go back to my home, and you know, eventually, after I get enough of that, I think we would like to travel the world and take vacations over to Europe and Asia and whatnot.
Yeah.
What was the experience like for you, like being back over there?
It was awesome. I just wanted to really relive my childhood. I wanted to walk through the streets that I used to walk to get to school. I wanted to walk to, my grandma used to own a shop in the market, and I wanted to walk to that. I wanted to taste the bread that I used to, my favorite bread that I used to eat when I was a kid. Yeah, I don't know. It's just in my head, I just wanted to do pretty much the same exact things that I did mm-hmm. when I was a child. God, I hate when I get emotional. Yeah, I just wanted to do that just because it was something that.
It's okay, Fila. Like it's okay to get it emotional. Like that's the purpose of this project, right? It's a safe place, right? It's a place where you can kind of explore what that was like.
Yeah. Give me a second.
And it's that's a very brave thing to do. I mean, to go out there in the open and tell your story, because I'm sure there's, like, my hope would be that there are other people who have had the similar experience or in the same shoes as you. And they're like, I see somebody else that, like, I feel like I have to downplay my community, or that person has to downplay in that community. And it's relieving, and it's nice to see someone be out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, that experience was amazing. It was, you know, I got to see the house that I grew up in. I got to talk to.
Do you still have family members that live there, like in that house?
Yeah, actually, we visited my grandfather, who I didn't even know he was alive, and he's kind of the reason as to why I was able to go down there. Because unfortunately, he's very ill. He's kind of honestly in his deathbed. Essentially, he can't talk. He's got a breathing tube, a feeding tube. And then he has a catheter. Is that what they call it? A catheter to, you know. And so he can barely get out of bed and whatnot. And when I heard about that, I was like, well, that's kind of a humanitarian reason for me to be able to go down to Mexico. Not only that, but I also visit my father. I never met my grandfather. I never met my father.
Yeah.
And we all share the same name, coincidentally.
Coincidence, it's who you're named after,
I guess. Okay, so yeah, it's who I'm named after. So my grandfather's name is Philadelphia, my father's name was Philadelphia, and I'm Philadelphia as well. So it was very neat seeing him. It was kind of bittersweet because when my father was killed, my mother went to live with her mom, and essentially the house that my dad built was taken away from him by my grandfather. And that's the house that he was in, which is a couple of houses down from where I lived. Essentially, that's where he's living now, and that's where he's pretty much living his last days of his life. So it was kind of bittersweet to know that, you know, my father built this house, like his own hands, and that it was taken away from my mother. And that side of the family never really did anything for our family, so they kind of essentially disowned us. And together it was kind of bittersweet, but then seeing him in the state and just knowing that he was part of my bloodline was very touching. And there was just a lot of emotions through that. But yeah, there was other family, you know, I mean, neighbors. So as a kid, I was like the youngest kid, and I was the little one, and there were tons of neighbors that recognized me, that stopped by to say hi.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I have.
You know, just to have people walking up to you and be like, "Oh my gosh, Fila," and just see you and.
Yeah, and I was just like, I don't remember you. I have a really bad memory, and I think part of it is also because of my history, my past.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the trauma that I choose not to remember certain things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there was definitely tons of people that, you know, that wanted to say hi, to stop by, and family members, cousins, uncles that were like, "Oh my God, we miss you so much. We haven't seen you since you were a kid. We loved you so much."
Yeah.
And you know, a good handful of those people, I just wouldn't remember. I'm just like, I love you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
don't feel bad. I've been through that too, man.
No, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. Going back to Mexico, yeah, it's just it's interesting. It was an awesome experience to be able to go back and you know seeing the family, hear stories about me as a child and
whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. He was kind of like, he led me to believe that his dad's family was never a part of his life, which I don't know that they were a big part of your life by any means, but like
my grandparents disowned us. That's, and they took the house, I feel like.
But yeah,
my aunts and uncles were still kind of there.
Yeah. So I didn't really know this. So we're, the first day we go to that, so his sister lives in the house he grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the house and like everybody uses the rooftops there, and we're up on the rooftop. Then all of a sudden he starts talking to this guy across the tiny little street who's also on his rooftop. And I like look at him and I'm like, okay, that's obviously Fila's family. Like they look so much alike. It was his uncle.
Oh like, my gosh.
Like chatting with
him.
And then a little while later, we're walking to go get tamales. And this guy's like in his window and his brother and sister were like, oh, that's like our cousin or whatever. And they see Fila and their eyes just like light up.
Oh my God.
Like, oh, that's Fila. And they're like, come in, come in.
Yeah.
I had no idea you had all this family that still lived.
So
they all lived within like three blocks.
Did you just
of each
not
other.
Think oh my God, members were around like and once. Interested in having a relationship with you at all?
So I guess I kind of take my statement back. It was more of my grandfather who just like disowned us. His part of the family, or his sons were my uncles and my cousins. I did hang out with them.
Yeah, gotcha. So you still kind of had to have those ties still with that part of your family in Mexico.
Yeah, I did.
They cracked us a beer. It was like 10:30 in the morning.
They're like, we're ready for you.
As they should.
All right.
I mean, you hadn't been back in over 20 years. Like, you deserved it. You deserved that. So, yes.
Victoria or Pacifico?
Corona.
Oh, it was Corona. It was like the...
It was the mega.
The, yeah.
This is a big old...
Nice.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say no.
I love it. I love it. I'm here for it.
How lucky he was to get that, to get approval, one, but then also, and then sharing the story of his experience. And then also, I think there's an opportunity to talk about the amount of money that was invested just to get approval. Well, I mean, the entire DACA process, right? Like, a lot of people just don't understand. Yeah, I mean, you know, from an outsider's perspective, they think, oh, they don't understand what DACA is. They don't understand why DACA is. All they see is, well, these people are coming over across, you know, crossing our borders to take our jobs and, you know, and whatever. Like, realistically, like, it is an entire process to do it legally. Like, it's a lot of money. It's about, you know, hiring people, you know, lawyers to kind of, you know, make sure that everything is done correctly. Every you know, it's a pay to play system, really.
I mean,
Heather, what was the entire experience? What was it like for you?
So I'm a person who, like, I guess I'm like an extreme empath, where like I feel so deeply when other people feel really deeply. So I knew it was going to be emotional after the videos that I had sent you of like where we were just like documenting the experience ourselves, because I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, it's going to be really neat. And when I asked Fila that day while we were just like sitting here on the couch, he had any advice for somebody, and he like got really emotional over that. And I never expected that, because he doesn't really show emotion well. So once that happened, I knew that the whole trip was going to be probably pretty emotional, especially getting there. So like he said, his brother's special needs. So he has, the way they've described it to me is, he has the intellect of a 9-year-old. So he doesn't know how to read or write, but they've taught him how to make phone calls. So he will like video call Fila almost every night of the week just to say hi.
Yeah.
So he knew that meeting was going to be like a really emotional one. So I actually recorded it, and even his brother started crying during it. They both did. And like to be there to see it is pretty cool, especially knowing how close I am to my family and like how that feels, and to know that he doesn't get the emotions that come with proximity, really. And hasn't had it for 20 years. So that was really cool. And then We also, when he met his grandfather, Fila's pretty stubborn about that whole situation, just because, like, knowing that his grandpa essentially, like, left his mom, like, to deal with the aftermath of losing his son, Fila has felt probably, I guess the best word is bitter. So he didn't expect to become emotional at all, but that was also an extremely emotional night of him meeting his grandfather. And, like, he's not verbal, but he can, like, move his hands to say yes to things and whatnot. And so his aunts and uncles, or just aunts, his aunts were there to, like, help kind of remind his grandpa of who Fila was, even, like, where he came from and all that. So that was really cool. And then the other thing that I thought was pretty significant, but you guys didn't really talk about it too much, was we went to Xochimilco, which is the little canal in Mexico City, and that's actually where they found his dad's body. And I think, like, that to me was, I would want that also. And I mean, your sister didn't really ever, like, you guys didn't really talk about it a lot, but I don't know.
Yeah, just, I mean, we talked about it as soon as we got there, once we got in the little canoe thing, and the gondolin or whatever they call it. We talked about it, but it was brief.
It was just a really neat experience to almost, and I told him, like, it was really difficult to have conversations with him in English too, because, like, hearing other people in Spanish that he's listening to, talking to people in Spanish, then hearing me in English. Mm-hmm. And then also just every time we would, like, turn a corner or see something else, I could see his memory, like, in his eyes, like, the, just, like, absorbing it all of, like, either this is different, or, like, I remember that, or whatever was going on there. Like, even down to, like, the bread, you got so excited when you found the little, like, pan dulce that you used to eat.
It was still there?
No, it was not the same person, but the specific style bread. I mean, we have one. We brought some back.
We filled
the bread. Here, I'll show you.
It's the cone with custard.
The cone with custard.
They're called cuerno de, what is it? Cuerno de relleno?
I call it cuerno relleno. It's just like a cone with, like, custard inside of it. And it's
delicious.
It was, like, my favorite as a kid. So yeah. I brought some back, but they're pretty much gone, Omar. I'm sorry. Hide all 10 of them. No, yeah, they're pretty much gone. I've
never seen that. I mean, yeah. I've had the Italian version, but I've never had the Mexican version. My thing from when I was a kid, my thing was empanadas with pumpkin and empanadas with pineapple. Those are the two things that and marranitos, because my grandfather every single morning would make a cup of Folgers coffee and have a marranito, and he would dip it into the coffee, and that's how you would eat it every morning.
It's that cookie that's shaped like a marranito?
Yeah, it's like a gingerbread. It's like a gingerbread, like, you know, cookie. But, you know, they're tough. You know, once they dry out, they're, like, tough. So you would dip it in the coffee to get it nice and wet. That's how you would eat it.
Those are good.
And so, like, for me.
So you didn't break your teeth on it?
Huh?
Just so you didn't break your teeth on it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what, yeah. And so, like, for me, I totally get the bakery situation because.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big thing for me.
Yeah, it's just. I don't know how to describe. How would you describe that? You know, just like that was something you said that you did with your uncle.
My grandfather.
Your grandfather. And so, and that was you as a kid, right? So like, it's just, I don't know how you describe that. It's just something special. And that's kind of like what I was saying when.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, man. Like,
I just wanted to, like, walk the same steps that I did when I was a kid. Just. To get that feeling, I guess.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Hmm? Yeah, the real of it, and
to feel that connection again.
Yeah. So, it was cool.
It's also really cool to see, like, even though, and I think Hila could probably agree, when I first met him and he didn't talk to his sister as often, and I asked him why, and he said, well, it's just awkward. And I was like, yeah, welcome to being an adult. Like, making connections again is awkward at first, but the more you do it, the less awkward it is. Mm-hmm. And now they're much closer than they were then, and they talk all the time. So it was really neat for me to meet her. And even though she speaks poor English and I speak poor Spanish, she still like taught me how to cook in her house. And like, we were able to just, I don't know, share stuff that always brought Fila joy, but then it was like bringing her joy to bring that to him. And she was like mad that her salsa wasn't salted enough at the end of the dinner. And like, I don't know, it was neat to be a part of all of it.
I'm sure that feels amazing just to have like those connections and to be a little bit closer than where you were before.
It was pretty neat. Omar, did you see the tattoo I got?
I did.
Oh, you got a tattoo? What is it?
So it's definitely Mexico City associated, and it's Mexico associated. It's El Ángel de Independencia. So like the Angel of Independence. It's a symbol that,
Put it up.
I don't know if you can see it too well here.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, so it's El Ángel. And so it's just the Independence Angel.
It's big too.
I like it a lot. I'm like super stoked on it. But for me, I really wanted to get that just because it's in Mexico City. It represents freedom. So on one hand, she's holding a chain, a broken chain, which represents, I guess, freedom. And on the other hand, she's holding a, what do you call that thing?
A wreath.
A
prosperity for what's to come.
Yeah, and she's holding it over Mexico as well. So it's just prosperity for everybody. And so that to me was like a huge thing, something that I really wanted to do since I was out here. And I actually had talked to my tattoo artist out here about it. But I was like, I'm going to hold off until I go to Mexico City, because it'll be more special to have it done by someone in Mexico City.
And also, your
freedom. Yeah.
I feel like there's, you know, there's that depth to it. There's definitely more to that. So it was pretty cool. That was definitely.
These docu kids essentially represent from their perspective and from their, you know, from the Mexican perspective, they see it as coming to the United States is an opportunity for a better life, right? To be able to have a better quality of life, be able to pursue that dream job, to just, I mean, just overall, right? Like if you're a parent, you want to have the best, you want to be able to afford your kids the best opportunity to be able to be successful, period, no matter what, right? From the Mexican standpoint, you want them, you know, you want a better life for your kids. And from the American standpoint, it's, you know, DACA is basically just in my opinion, and Fila, stop me if I'm wrong, but it's basically just a carrot on a stick, right? It's basically showing you the citizenship. Here, you can have this, but only if you keep paying us. You know, only if you keep, you know, oh, you want to go back to, you don't want to not be deported. Okay. You got to keep paying us. If you want representation to be an official U.S. citizen, got to keep paying us. Oh, you want to have the opportunity to be granted permission to go see your family in your old country. You got to pay us for that too. You know, I see that money transaction is a very transactional relationship. That coupled with the fact that, parole, I don't know. I think there's something there I think that's very impactful, because many people, unless they're going through this situation, going through the process themselves, or have very close proximity to people that are going through the process, that they can understand or appreciate how shitty this entire situation is.
I don't know if I necessarily think that they're doing DACA just to like for profit money, because I mean, although it is a good chunk of money to renew it and it's a good chunk of money to be able to apply for advanced parole and for the rest
of the even the fact that they call it parole, I think is insulting.
I mean, I think it. I think the verbiage is definitely is. I think that the verbiage is wrong that they call it that. Mm-hmm. Just how they used to call us aliens. I believe that they just passed a law saying that we're no longer going to be called aliens anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what like what do you mean we're aliens? Like we're part of the same continent.
Right.
Yeah. We're people.
Yeah.
People. Period.
Yeah.
What is, because we've talked about so much tonight, and there's so many things. I mean, you could definitely say, if there was one thing about your story that you can tell people, what would that one thing be?
Don't give up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just say don't give up. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there's more. I just can't put it into words.
Yeah. But after our call.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, Fila, you have an amazing story, and, like, we want to do it right. So thank you so much for sharing it, and, like, your honesty. I admire it and appreciate you so much.
Thanks.
That's a rough experience, Fila.
It's interesting. You just – the one thing you never do in life is feel sorry for yourself, because it's a downward spiral and it's a black hole and you get lost in it real quick. So that's, you know, if I could say anything to anybody, it's just like, don't feel sorry for yourself. I've done that, and it's like, it's not pretty, and you just got to realize that you have to overcome and you just have to overcome it and keep moving forward, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everybody has a story, you know. Just a lot of people just don't share them.
And thank you so much for listening to the Learning Man podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. I could not thank you enough for joining me on this journey. If you enjoyed what you heard and would like some more of that content, we're going to be dropping new episodes every Friday. So make sure and hit that follow button wherever you listen to your podcast, and write us a review, because it really does help the channel. Share what topic you want to tackle next, or maybe the name of a guest that you want to hear from. Thank you again for joining in this journey. It means so much to me.